Welcome to our OWEN podcast, a podcast for the Ontario Animal Health Network. I'm Dr. Cynthia Miltenberg, co-lead of the OWEN Bovine Network. Joining me today is Dr. Rebecca Egan, veterinary pathologist at the Animal Health Laboratory in Guelph. And today we're going to take a look back at 2023 and the highlights we saw this year in terms of surveillance in Ontario, outside of Ontario, and activities of the OWEN Bovine Network. All the information we are discussing today is also available for Ontario veterinarians in our quarterly veterinary reports, so be sure to check those out at owen.ca. To start off, we're going to be talking about Salmonella Dublin. In 2023, we provided a Salmonella Dublin yearly report again, which covers the previous year, so this actually covers 2022. There were 25 lab diagnostic submissions to the Animal Health Lab that detected Salmonella Dublin. The submissions were estimated to represent 23 separate outbreaks from 21 different farms. And for 13 farms, this was their first diagnosis of Salmonella Dublin. Keep an eye out for the next few months of 2024 as the 2023 data finishes rolling in. OWEN will again be providing a yearly summary that will update you to the end of 2023. Other highlights for vets on the Salmonella Dublin front were that the Salmonella Dublin ELISA test is now available for milk, including pooled bulk milk tank samples at Guelph. And for the Salmonella Dublin ELISA testing, it was incorporated into the Ontario Interactive Animal Pathogen Dashboards. So check out the AHL website for more information on both of those items. In 2023, there were 3 cattle herds diagnosed with lead toxicity. Lead is one of the most common toxins in cattle, because cattle tend to be curious and are often indiscriminate feeders. Although lead cases are sporadic, they tend to happen when cattle are turned out to pastures that contain a lead source. Lead sources can include discarded batteries from automobiles or farm machinery, particularly if they have gone through a freeze-thaw cycle and have a damaged case. Old lead-based paints, discarded engine oil, discarded farm machinery, roofing materials, plumbing supplies, lead shot and other waste are other less common sources. Prevention involves checking pastures and pens for discarded materials before turning cattle out. Disposing of used batteries, paint, and oil at local collection stations for hazardous waste will ensure cattle do not find these materials. And now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Rebecca Egan for some highlights from AHL in 2023.
Over the course of the year spanning from the beginning of November 2022 through to the end of October 2023, we received a total of nearly 6,500 bovine submissions. Approximately 760 of these had a pathology component, and I've gone through and selected a few interesting pathology cases to outline today. Starting off back in fall of 2022, we had 3 related submissions where we received multiple slaughter samples from white veal calves that had been experiencing increased condensations due to liver and muscle lesions. Microscopic examination confirmed presence of eosinophilic myositis and eosinophilic portal hepatitis, but a specific etiologic agent could not be confirmed in association with either lesion. Overall, the lesions were compatible with a response to helminth parasite migration in the liver based on the targeting of the biliary tree and regions of parenchymal disruption and necrosis. And in one case, there were a few possible little parasite ova that were observed within the necrosis. Now, with respect to the muscle lesions, bovine eosinophilic myositis is hypothesized to result from degradation of encysted sarcocystis organisms in the muscle, inciting an inflammatory response and possible hypersensitivity type response. In one of these cases, there were a few quiescent sarcocystis type cysts in the muscle, and these were intact and not associated with any inflammation. So ultimately, in this case, it's suspected that the muscle and liver lesions were unrelated to each other with respect to etiology, but involvement of both organ systems may have been a reflection of the general parasite load in the herd. Now, following the theme of parasitic disease, in the winter of 2023, we had 2 separate cases of parasitic pneumonia. One was in February, involving a 2-year-old Angus beef animal from a farm in southern Ontario, where multiple animals were showing signs of pneumonia. And the other was in March from a 3-year-old Angus beef animal that died acutely on farm in northern Ontario. In both cases, microscopic examination identified necrotizing eosinophilic bronchointerstitial pneumonia. In the first case, parasite larvae were observed within the pulmonary lesion, and a mild hepatitis and eosinophilic lymphadenitis was present as well. In the second case, parasites were not observed in the lung lesion, which remained compatible with parasitic pneumonia, but there was a concurrent eosinophilic enterocolitis with presence of nematode larvae there. In both cases, testing to definitively identify the causal parasite was not performed. For one case, there was a history of pigs in the barn, so Ascaris suum was deemed the most likely etiologic agent there, as Ascaris suum eggs are extremely hardy and long-lived in the environment. There is, to note, there is a bovine roundworm, but it's uncommon in North America, and infection is largely asymptomatic in adult cattle. Now, fast forward to fall of 2023, we had another case of verminous pneumonia, this time in a yearling steer that was found dead on pasture. He was reported to be a poor doer and had no recent history of overt clinical disease. The on-farm necropsy revealed grossly abnormal lungs and many 2.5 centimeter long lungworms in the bronchioles, and microscopic examination of the tissues confirmed a severe chronic granulomatous and eosinophilic bronchopneumonia with presence of intralesional nematode ova there. In this case, a Barrowman fecal flotation was performed and identified Dictyocollis viviparis larvae and feces. Now, with this parasite, the development and severity of clinical disease can vary based on the rate of ingestion of infective larvae, and clinical lungworm disease is most often reported in young animals towards the end of their first grazing season, particularly if the pasture is used repeatedly year over year. For the next case, I'll go back to the spring of 2023. So this is when we had an abortion investigation involving a Shorthorn Jersey Holstein dairy operation. For this one, one aborted fetus and placenta was received at the AHL, and the submitting clinician reported that there had been 4 abortions in the previous week, all of which were at 6 to 7 months gestation. This was an organic herd housed in a pack barn with no vaccination and no recent medical therapy. Gross and microscopic examination of the fetus and placenta did not identify any inflammatory lesions, and PCR testing of the pooled fetal liver, kidney, and spleen did not detect bovine herpes virus 1 or Neospora caninum, but it did detect Leptospira with a fairly high CT value of about 34. So in light of that, Leptospira MAT, which stands for microscopic agglutination test, was then performed on the fetal thoracic fluid, and this revealed that antibodies were present to multiple Leptospira serovars. So, and with this, the highest result was for Harjo. At the level, it was about 400. So this serovar is most commonly identified in leptospiral abortions, it seems, and it typically causes abortions in the last trimester of pregnancy. Generally, the diagnosis of leptospiral abortion can be difficult, particularly if there are no histologic lesions and if maternal serology isn't performed. Plus, there can be complicating factors like vaccination and environmental contamination, so it can be tricky. Still, considering the available information in this case, abortion due to leptospirosis was considered likely, and it was suggested that serology on aborting cattle and unaffected cattle together could be helpful in establishing the significance of this agent at the herd level. Moving on to July 2023 for the next case, there was a 12-day-old heifer calf that was submitted to the AHL for necropsy. The calf had been reported to have made several attempts to stand after birth, and while consistently being bright and alert and with a good appetite, the calf did not stand. And it was noted that there did appear to be some contracted fetlocks, I believe in the forelimbs. At 4 days of age, the calf broke with diarrhea and a fever that resolved pretty quickly with treatment. But she continued to be unable to stand on her own. She could stand if she was lifted, but she couldn't walk without falling. So this animal presented for necropsy, and flexural contraction of the deep digital flexor tendons was confirmed in the forelimbs, but there were no other musculoskeletal abnormalities identified. This was the second calf from the same bull that had recumbency issues. So the possibility of early onset muscle weakness syndrome, which has also been referred to as calf recumbency syndrome or muscle weakness. So that possibility was raised. This syndrome has come to light in the last few years, I believe, with some research performed at Pennsylvania State University. And it's characterized by Holstein calves exhibiting weakness and inability to stand within the first 2 months of life. Through genotyping, the researchers have found that there's evidence to suggest that a genetic mutation in the CACNA1S gene is involved. And Holstein Association USA has denoted this a genetic condition under investigation. At this point, more information is needed to investigate the condition, and data collection is ongoing. There is a commercially available test. There are options in the United States for testing. And I noted that just last week, there was an online Lactinet article regarding trends in haplotype and genetic recessives, which indicated that in the coming months, Lactinet will use results from U.S. haplotype-based analysis to calculate and display carrier probability values for this condition on their website. So that's something that you can check out. Now, going back to another infectious disease case, there was an interesting submission in July 2023 involving a mature Jersey cow that was 6 days in milk and had presented with abrupt drop in milk production, red urine, decreased appetite, pale mucous membranes, and on-farm necropsy. Definitely the icteric pale mucous membranes and yellow-tinged liver were identified, with blood work showing a marked regenerative anemia. Tissues were also sent for histology, which revealed acute hepatic necrosis and some renal tubular degeneration. And both of these lesions seemed most consistent with acute hypoxic injury. And also in the renal tubules, there was some pigment suspicious for hemoglobin. A search then for the cause of hemolytic anemia was pursued, and PCR testing of kidney was negative for Leptospira, and then PCR testing on EDTA blood was negative for anaplasma, but the EDTA blood was positive for Mycoplasma winonii. So in light of this, infection with this hemotropic parasite combined with, you know, immunosuppression associated with calving in the postpartum period was the presumed cause of this animal's rapid clinical deterioration and death. Now, when we think about it, okay, extravascular hemolysis would have been incited by presence of the hemotropic parasite. And it may be that there was intravascular hemolysis as well. Mycoplasma winonii infection has previously been suggested as a trigger for immune-mediated hemolytic anemia at a cow. So that's interesting. And now it seems as though most cattle infected with Mycoplasma winonii do not develop clinical disease. But clinical illness can perhaps arise in animals that become immunosuppressed. Also, while not described in this case, some additional clinical signs that can be seen in affected animals include swollen teats, edema of the distal limbs, prefemoral lymphadenopathy, maybe transient fever, weight loss, diarrhea, and reproductive insufficiency. And finally, in September of 2023, we had a case of sudden death where an adult shorthorn cow was observed to be normal at 2 a.m. and then was found deceased on pasture a few hours later. She was the third animal to die out of a herd of 10 in a span of approximately 12 hours. The animals had been in the same field for about a month with no issues. So this animal was sent to AHL for necropsy, and that revealed the presence of a Japanese yew plant admixed with twigs and roughage in the rumen. And exposure to even a small amount of Japanese yew, which is a common ornamental shrub in North America, is sufficient to cause a fatal toxicity due to its cardiotoxic effects, leading to a cardiac arrhythmia. So in this case, additional follow-up was obtained, and it was confirmed that shrubs had been trimmed on the property, and then the trimmings had been thrown into the pasture with the cattle. So this case highlights the importance of careful monitoring of feed and plants and water that livestock have access to, and of considering all potential sources of exposure in cases of suspected toxicity.
So now we're going to jump over to our global surveillance update. First up, Theileria orientalis of the genotype Aikida was found on a dairy farm in Genesee County, New York State, in August of last year. This will be of interest to Ontario veterinarians as Genesee County is located close to Ontario, east of Niagara Falls between Buffalo and Rochester. Theileria orientalis is a tick-borne protozoan and an emerging disease in the United States. It infects red and white blood cells, resulting in bovine infectious anemia. Clinical signs from the Aikida genotype appear similar to bovine anaplasmosis. Cattle may present with anemia, icterus, weakness, or sudden death. Mortality has been estimated at 5% in affected herds. Cattle that recover typically become carriers. Theileria species are typically transmitted by infected ticks or by mechanical transmission such as reuse of needles. In Asia, Australia, and New Zealand, the primary tick vector for Theileria orientalis Aikida is the Asian longhorn tick. Asian longhorn tick was first detected in the USA in 2017 and has since been found in 19 states as of October 2023. Asian longhorn tick has been found in southern New York State. There has been no detections of this Asian longhorn tick in Canada to date. Now jumping across the pond, we have, beginning in September of 2023, an outbreak of blue tongue virus reported on 4 sheep farms in the Netherlands. This was the first detection of blue tongue in the Netherlands since 2009. As of January 8, 2024, the country reports 4,421 confirmed PCR positive blood tests in both cattle herds and sheep flocks. Whole genome sequencing has confirmed that the virus is serotype 3, and the variant differs from previous outbreaks worldwide. There is no vaccine available for serotype 3. Belgium, Germany, and the United Kingdom have all since reported cases of serotype 3. Blue tongue is transmitted by biting midges, Culicoides species. More information coming up on those in the next section. We're now going to take a look at a couple of projects and activities of the Owen Bovine Network this year. First, I want to direct you to the project summary and resources from the Bovine Owen Trace Mineral Monitoring in Beef Cattle Herds project. Trace minerals play an important role in cow health, growth, immune function, and productivity. Supply of trace minerals to beef cattle can vary with soil type, pasture, forages and feedstuffs, supplementation formulations, and dry matter intake, and requirements vary with cattle age and production stage. The Owen Bovine Network designed this project after receiving multiple concerns from veterinarians related to trace mineral deficiencies in beef cattle. The project offered herd veterinarians the opportunity to assess mineral status in individual beef herds with blood testing, and the network was given the opportunity to assess risk for trace mineral disorders across a selection of cows within the province with these consolidated results. For this project, 694 blood samples were submitted from 69 different herds across Ontario, collected at fall reproductive exams. The most significant abnormalities noted included 43% of samples deficient for selenium, which is very low, and a further 53% of samples which were less than adequate, subpar low. 32% of samples had less than adequate copper, and 2.3% of samples were deficient for copper. Lastly, interestingly, 32% of samples were elevated for molybdenum, and 22% of samples were very high for molybdenum. Many herds experienced several mineral abnormalities, and mineral abnormalities tended to cluster in herds. A follow-up survey offered insights into the mineral supplementation strategies used on the farms and the results of the subsequent calving season. To find out even more about this project and a full description of the results, check out the summary of a project report available on the Owen project page. For veterinarians, there is also a recorded webinar available through your veterinary login on the Owen website. This webinar includes a presentation from our esteemed colleague, Dr. Cheryl Waldner, on trace mineral issues and supplementation strategies in beef herds. Next up is our Culicoides project. Dr. Katie Clow and her team completed a project on the identification of Culicoides species in selected areas of Ontario. and this was a joint project between the bovine, small ruminant, and equine networks. Culicoides, also known as biting midges, are important vectors of several livestock diseases, including blue tongue virus, an epizootic hemorrhagic disease virus in ruminants. Sampling was conducted at 9 livestock sites, consisting of ovine, bovine, and equine farms. A diversity of Culicoides species were detected across the farms, including Culicoides subgenus Avirita that was detected on all premises. This subgenus includes 3 species that have been confirmed as vectors for blue tongue virus in Europe. For more details on this project, Owen Bovine has recently recorded an entire podcast with Dr. Clow and master's student Valentina, with all the details. I hope you'll check that out. And lastly, a quick update on our current project. Mycoplasma wononii, as Rebecca previously mentioned, is a cattle-specific member of the Hemoplasmas and recognized as a hemotrophic epicellular bacterial parasite found near the membrane of cattle red blood cells. Mycoplasma wononii has been recognized in 6 animals exhibiting the signs, as described by Rebecca, but also detected in apparently healthy animals with asymptomatic infection. Prolonged infection has been linked to lower milk yield, reduced calf birth weights, and reproductive inefficiency. The relevance of subclinical infection is unknown. However, researchers have hypothesized that hemotrophic mycoplasmas may enhance expression of other diseases. Mycoplasma wononii can be transmitted by direct transfer of infected blood, such as the reuse of contaminated needles, or by vectors such as lice, flies, ticks, and mosquitoes. Vertical transmission in utero has also been reported. Candidatus mycoplasma haemophobus is another hemotrophic mycoplasma species that has been shown to cause anemia and depression with similar risks for transmission as Mycoplasma wononii and found in cattle in the USA. Since mycoplasma was diagnosed in a clinical outbreak on a dairy farm in Ontario in 2017, and more recently again in a dairy count in 2023, Owen Bovine Network designed their latest project to investigate this further. The objective of the project is to conduct a pilot study of blood samples collected from Ontario dairy cattle and explore the presence of Mycoplasma wononii and Candidatus mycoplasma haemophobus in Ontario cattle populations. We're currently collecting that data now, so stay tuned for those results coming in the next couple of months. That brings us to the end of the items we have to share with you today. I want to thank all our Owen Bovine Network members for all their work in 2023, especially Rebecca for compiling all the Animal Health Laboratory data quarterly for our meetings. It's a really big job and we appreciate it. And to all the veterinarians out there in the field, selecting cases for workup every day and participating in surveillance. Thanks for joining us today for this Bovine Owen podcast. For more information about the Owen Species Networks or to access our veterinary producer quarterly reports and other resources, check out our website at owen.ca.